Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Malloy program. Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, today is the, autumnal equinox, or the autumn equinox. Autumnal? Is that the way you say it? Autumnal equinox. Today, the sun crossed the celestial equator on its way south, sort of, you know what I mean. Happened at 5:18 p.m. today, Eastern Daylight Time. So, happy autumn. It also begins spring in the Southern Hemisphere. If you're listening in Australia or in Argentina, happy spring, right? And also, in this little note I have, it's also the beginning of the aurora season. If you live at the North or South Poles, are there northern, southern lights, Borealis? Is that Aurora Borealis? I know that's the northern hemisphere. What do they have in the southern hemisphere? Is that also the Aurora Borealis? It must be something. Must be a different word. I'm sure I will have some help with that before this segment's up. But so if you're listening via the internet and you are camped out in near the North Pole, the lights should begin this evening. I've seen the Aurora Borealis only twice in my life, and it is stunning. So happy fall equinox to our listeners in the Northern Hemisphere. Not a moment too soon here in the Atlanta area, assuming usually fall is a pretty dry period here, but the death toll in Atlanta, in the Atlanta area now, I believe is up to 9, 10 of people who have died in these floods. It's just an astonishing, astonishing scene down here. I've lived in the Atlanta area almost 40 years. I've never seen anything like this. And people who have been reporting on this say it is very unusual for this kind of flooding in an area where there is not, you know, a tropical storm or hurricane or what have you. So enough with the weather reports. A little bit of church news before we get into the madness of a couple of topics we have tonight. There is I didn't know this. There was a window that was open, a 1-year window that allowed people who were molested by priests. I don't know if this is just California. They had a 1-year window to file civil lawsuits back in 2003. This comes courtesy of Kay Ebling, City of Angels, numeral 5.blogspot.com. City of Angels 5.blogspot.com. Anyway, the church is telling Iraq veterans, if you were overseas in 2003, or, I guess, Afghanistan veterans, too. If you were overseas in 2003, too bad. If you were molested as a boy by a priest or a girl by a priest and you were in the service in 2003 during this 1-year window of opportunity, that's right, phrase, to file a civil lawsuit, the window is now closed and you can go to hell. The blog says service members who are at war during that 1-year window that allowed lawsuits against the church should not be allowed to proceed with lawsuits filed last year regarding child molestation by priests, even though federal law allows benefits such as delayed lawsuits for active duty personnel. What is that called? Is that called the Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act or something? Wasn't it called the Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act? Excuse me. It was designed to protect members of the military when they were overseas. Let me see here. It's named the Servicemen's Relief Act now. But back in the day, I think it was the Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act or something. But so there was a lawsuit filed last year, 2008, in California regarding this molestation that apparently it just seems like it's never going to stop. The reporting on it is never going to stop. And we can be assured that even as we're sitting here tonight, somewhere on the sad, tired, busted planet, there are probably scores, if not hundreds, of priests who are currently molesting children. We know this as we sit here because it is the nature of the Catholic priesthood to encourage molestation of children. Ah, but you say, I'm a Catholic, Malloy, and you're a goddamn liar. Well, if that were not the case, then you would think that the Catholic Church would have at some time in its bloody history expelled, excommunicated, destroyed, incarcerated, hanged, or otherwise gotten rid of priests who molest children. Such is not the case, gentle listener. The case truly is that these priests were just shuffled around where they had fresh meat that they could destroy, fresh children who could be told, if you don't submit to Father so-and-so or Bishop so-and-so or whatever, the jaws of hell will open and swallow you. And after you have submitted to Father so-and-so, if you say a word to anyone, the jaws of hell will open up and swallow your parents. Thus, the power of religion. So anyway, both Cardinal Roger Mahoney of Los Angeles and Bishop Robert Brohm of San Diego want several civil cases regarding molestation thrown out because the plaintiffs were overseas in the military during the one-year window that opened to file civil lawsuits in 2003. How about that? One of these several plaintiffs is still in Iraq. Another adult victim of a pedophile priest was in Guam. There were others who were in far-flung places on active duty during this time and didn't file their lawsuit until 20 months after leaving the military. The church wants to refuse veterans their right to file lawsuits under a California law now that they have returned from active duty. And as Kay Ebeling writes, Americans go to great lengths to ensure men and women who serve their country do not lose their rights, especially when serving overseas during wartime. Apparently, church hierarchy are above the law, like they're above the law that requires reporting of sex crimes against children to law enforcement. It's astonishing. It's just astonishing. American laws, Kay Ebeling writes, to provide for military personnel across all political lines, Republicans and Democrats stop fighting with each other when it comes to the issue of providing every benefit and right and generously to every person who serves our country, especially now in time of war. Everyone agrees with this except Catholic Church hierarchy. In court today, Kay Ebeling writes, attorneys for both the San Diego and Los Angeles archdiocese fought hard and then harder to get the judge to dismiss cases filed by returning military personnel. The argument the church had, the servicemen waited too long. They should have filed their cases anyway. Even if they were in the middle of fighting a war in 2003, they should have filed as soon as they stepped off the plane from Iraq. No consideration at all for their circumstances. If you are a Catholic, are you not outraged by this? If you are a Catholic, I would ask you one question, why? But that's between you and your belief system, I guess. I guess there hasn't been an order yet from the judge. But is it not stomach-churning to think that Cardinal Mahoney of Los Angeles, the second largest archdiocese in the country? Cardinal Roger Mahoney would deny people who were... what does Cardinal Mahoney want? Would he have preferred that these young men have been killed in Iraq rather than come home and file lawsuits? Apparently so. You know, I've railed many times against the murderous attitudes of the Christian Church, all branches of it. I don't care if it's fundamentalist Protestant or this sick Roman Church. But this is pretty astonishing to me. You know, once again, I'll say it again. Once you think you've heard just about everything, something like this comes along. Thanks to Kay Ebling at cityofangels5.blogspot.com for that hideous story. We'll be right back.
Before I was born, and the one thing they say about Catholics is they'll take you as soon as you're warm. You don't have to be a six-footer. You don't have to have a great brain. You don't have to have any clothes on. You're a Catholic the moment that came. Because every sperm is sacred. Every sperm is...
Mike Malloy program is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for info on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. 21 past the hour. Okay, Aurora Australis. That's the southern polar lights. It has similar properties to the Aurora Borealis, but it is only visible from high southern latitudes in Antarctica, South America, or Australia. Australis is the Latin word for of the south. There you go. Huh? Aurora Borealis, Aurora Australis. I knew it. Actually, I knew that too, but it was not accessible in the mush that is the filing cabinet I carry around in my brain. You know, I had a caller last night, remember, who wanted to know what a Blue Dog Democrat was, what the term meant. And I think I gave her a fairly workable definition. In my opinion, a Blue Dog Democrat really should be a Republican. I don't know why they continue to call themselves Democrats. A classic example is Representative Mike Ross. He is from Arkansas. And ProPublica today had an article that is pretty astonishing. It was co-published with Politico.com, ProPublica.com, Politico.com. And it appeared in their online editions and their print editions today. It's about Arkansas Representative and supposed Democrat Mike Ross, a Blue Dog Democrat playing a key role in the healthcare debate. And what it has to do with is a piece of commercial property that he and his wife owned. They sold it in 2007. And the buyer of this piece of property was an Arkansas-based pharmacy chain with a very deep interest in how the healthcare debate plays out. Now, Ross sold the real estate in Prescott, Arkansas, to a company called USA Drug for $420,000, which, as ProPublica says, is an eye-popping number for real estate in that tiny train and lumber town about 100 miles southwest of Little Rock. Adam Guthrie, chairman of the County Board of Equalization and the only licensed real estate appraiser in Prescott, Arkansas, said, quote, you can buy half the town for $420,000. But that was just the beginning, according to ProPublica, of what Ross and his wife, Holly, who is a pharmacist, made from the sale of this piece of property that was a drugstore called Holly's Health Mart. The owner of USA Drug, Stephen LaFrance Sr., also paid the Rosses $500,000 to $1 million for the pharmacy's assets, and paid Holly Ross another $100,000 to $250,000 for signing a non-compete agreement. Now, those numbers, which Ross listed on the financial disclosure reports he files as a member of Congress, bring the total value of the transaction for this little corner drugstore in tiny Prescott, Arkansas, to between $1 and $1.67 million. Dollars. And that's not counting the $2,300 in campaign contribution that Representative Ross received from the owner of this pharmacy chain 2 weeks after the sale closed. Now, at the time of the sale, the county assessor's office valued the pharmacy's building and the land on which it sits at $263,000, which is about $160,000 less than the Rosses got for it or paid for it. Because assessor's valuations don't always reflect true market value, ProPublica hired Mr. Guthrie to appraise the property. He placed the current value of the lot and building at $198,000. Guthrie explained the difference between his appraisal and the county assessment by saying that county assessments have been running higher than actual market value. Now, Mike Ross frequently, lately, has been speaking for a coalition of so-called House moderates, known as the Blue Dog Democrats, a group that helped force changes to the version of the health care reform bill that was drafted by the House Energy and Commerce Committee. His role in gutting this attempt to bring national health care to the American public, that his role has lifted him to national prominence in recent months. So you can find this article at ProPublica.com or go to Politico.com. Mike Ross, Representative Mike Ross, brings in between $1 and $1.6 million on a crappy ass little piece of property. It's all legal, all above board, has nothing to do with his work on the House Energy Committee where it concerned the health care bill. Not a thing. And any argument to the contrary is a filthy lie and trying to impugn the motives of Representative Mike Ross and his wife, Holly. There is no such thing as a conflict of interest here. There is nothing here. Move on. Just move on. So, Blue Dog Democrats, they are scum. And Mike Ross should be defeated the next time he runs for office, which will be next November, by a real Democrat. If, and I say this advisedly, there are any left in Arkansas. For the hour. By the way, it's ProPublica.org or Politico.com if you would like to take a look at the article about Representative Mike Ross, the Blue Dog Democrat from Arkansas who makes a lot of money standing in the way of health care reform. The McClatchy Newspaper's Washington Bureau is or did report something last Friday that kind of blew by everybody because it wasn't all that important until the report by General Stanley McChrystal was leaked to the Washington Post, to the Washington Post, so that General McChrystal's demands could be out there before Barack Obama makes his decision. Now, I think it's very clear that this is just kind of a reversal of what should happen. The most famous general I am aware of who got cashiered, who got fired, was General Douglas MacArthur, who was fired by President Harry Truman because MacArthur simply decided that he knew more about foreign policy where it concerned the Korean conflict than the civilian leadership in this country, and publicly stated, I think General MacArthur did, that among other things, he disagreed with the policy of that was in play, wrong term there, but it was being used during the Korean conflict that caused the lives of 48,000 Americans, and nobody knows today how many Koreans. Further, once it became clear that the Chinese were sending troops into the Korean Peninsula, MacArthur wanted to drop nuclear bombs on China. And, of course, Truman decided that it was better to have an ex-commander, supreme ally commander, than one who was usurping the power put in the hands of the civilian leadership by the U.S. Constitution. So MacArthur was fired. Apparently, General McChrystal either is not familiar with that story, which is impossible, or really doesn't care. Three officers at the Pentagon and in Kabul told McClatchy newspapers that McChrystal would resign before he'd stand behind a policy that he thought would endanger his forces or the strategy. A senior official in Kabul said, quote, yes, he'll be a good soldier, but he will only go so far. He'll hold his ground. He's not going to bend to political pressure. That last sentence is the one that's intriguing to me. He's not going to bend to political pressure. Wait a second. Is that what civilian leadership has become to some of these out-of-control, gung-ho killers like McChrystal? It was McChrystal, who apparently was the wet ops guy for Vice President Dick Cheney, the assassination squad that Seymour Hersh wrote about and talked about. It was General McChrystal who was appointed the commander in Afghanistan by Barack Obama. So what does that mean where it concerns Barack Obama? Appointing someone who is saying, look, I've got a military strategy over here. It's my strategy. I'm the general in the field. I'm in control. I will not change that strategy because of political pressure. I will resign first. Well, good for you for recognizing that that's what you'll have to do, Mr. McChrystal, or General McChrystal, is resign. But the idea that it is being said that he's not going to bend to political pressure, I'm not saying that's a direct quote from McChrystal at all. As a matter of fact, McClatchy did not source their comments because of the nature of the comments, obviously. But in the last couple of weeks, top administration officials have suggested that more American troops would be sent to Afghanistan. And then they backtracked and called that suggestion premature. Earlier this month, Michael McMullen, Admiral Michael Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, said that, quote, time is not on our side where it concerns deciding what to do. And on last Thursday, Secretary of Defense Robert Gates urged the public, quote, to take a deep breath, end quote, whatever the hell that means. Now, according to the correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers, the Obama White House spokesman did not respond to requests for comment, and officials willing to speak did so only on the condition of anonymity because they weren't authorized to speak publicly. McClatchy says in Kabul, Afghanistan, some members of McChrystal's staff said they don't understand why Obama called Afghanistan a war of necessity but still hasn't given them the resources they need to turn things around quickly. I guess because during the campaign, Barack Obama, like any politician, will use the buzz phrases and the sentences and phrases that he thinks will get him votes. War of necessity, an invasion of Afghanistan, a war of necessity. I would disagree with that, and I probably have as much experience in studying the history of conflicts as Barack Obama does. Because, you see, I watch the History Channel. That gives me a leg up on understanding conflicts that go all the way back to Alexander's battles with the Persians. So I'm going to assume that I know as much about strategies and tactics as President Obama.
Well, what about his briefings, Mike?
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Apparently his briefings are not all that reality-based. So given all that, If General McChrystal is saying to his friends, and his friends are reporting to McClatchy newspapers, if the general doesn't get his way, he will resign because he's not going to bend to political pressure, is it not time for Barack Obama to say to the general, adios, goodbye, go make your speech to Congress the way MacArthur did. You know, old soldiers never die, they just get retired, or whatever the hell it was MacArthur said. And please don't anybody send me a Wikipedia link to the speech that MacArthur said, because frankly, I don't care. But this is the setting now in which Obama is supposed to be making his decision about whether or not to commit more American young men and women to a war that A, cannot be won in any sense of that word. B, cannot be won in any sense of that word. C, cannot be won in any sense of that word. Bob Herbert in today's New York Times wrote about, in his column, his op-ed piece, wrote a column about this. I don't think there's anyone, the American public does not support this war. It is destroying the country. It is destroying our military preparedness. It is eating into, the only people who want this are crazed career fighters like McChrystal, who I'm beginning to believe is out of his mind, kind of like Colonel Kurtz in Heart of Darkness or in Apocalypse Now, whose theory was kill them all, let God sort them out, an out-of-control killer who really doesn't care about the political implications or the political reverberations that continuing to blow up civilians, continuing to destroy villages, continuing to do what in Afghanistan that's helping the United States? Nothing. I don't think McChrystal gets it. I don't think he cares. McChrystal is probably a war lover, one of those people who, military or civilian, more dangerous when they're civilian, who appreciates, what was the guy, was it Major or Colonel, the guy in Apocalypse Now who loved the smell of napalm in the morning? I forget his name, the one that rode on, told his gunships to open up the speakers and play Ride of the Valkyries from Wagner. And then when they landed, wanted one of his boys, who he found out was a surfer from California, to go out and surf. Oh, Jesus. There are people like that in the military. There are people like that in civilian life who determine what the military does. But they are too cowardly to put on a uniform and actually pick up a weapon and go die. I think everybody in the Bush crime family was that way. Every single one of the sons of bitches was an absolute stoned-out coward. They were willing to commit American soldiers to death, but not any time in their lives when they had ample opportunity to join the military and enter into a combat situation. No, 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 no. I've got better things to do, was the standard refrain. So here we are. The top military commander in Afghanistan, as far as the U.S. and the NATO is involved, will probably, my guess the other night was 40,000 troops. McClatchy is saying it's around 45,000 troops, 45,000 more troops to go into a situation that is simply, strictly unwinnable. There was a time when the war and the occupation invasion of Vietnam was considered to be winnable. All the lies and the blood and the brutality that war represented. And for what? So that Colin Powell could dance half naked on the stage in Hanoi 35 years later. This is obscenity. You want obscenity? You want pornography? You don't have to listen to these freaks talk about, well, pornography will turn your son gay. You don't have to go to websites. You want real obscenity? This is real obscenity. What the military and apparently the Obama administration is considering where it concerns Afghanistan. This has got to stop. It does. If this country is going to survive, it's really kind of that simple.
The Allies. What could we say? We're only 25 years old. With 25 sweet summers and hot fires in the this kind of life makes that violence unthinkable.
Next spring break. Gosh, you said you knew well and sometimes hated. Isn't there
Screaming with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour at TomDispatch.com. There is a post by Ann Jones, a correspondent. And I want to share one of the quotes out of this. Michael sent it to us. This is what Ann Jones had to say. In the heat of the summer, I went out to the training fields near Kabul, where Afghan army recruits are put through their paces, and it was quickly evident just what's getting lost in translation. Our trainers, soldiers from the Illinois National Guard, were masterful, professional, and highly skilled. They were dedicated to carrying out their mission and doing the job well. They were also big, strong, camouflaged, combat-booted, supersized American men, their bodies swollen by flak jackets and lashed with knives, handguns, and God only knows what else. Any American could be proud of their commitment to tough duty. The Afghans were puny by comparison, hundreds of little Davids to the overstuffed American Goliaths training them. Keep in mind, Afghan recruits come from a world of desperate poverty. They're almost uniformly malnourished and underweight. Many are no bigger than I am, 5'4" and thin. And some probably not much stronger. Like me, many sag under the weight of a standard-issue flak jacket. Their American trainers spoke of upper body strength deficiency and prescribed push-ups because their trainees buckle under the backpacks filled with 50 pounds of equipment and ammo they're expected to carry. All this material must seem absurd to men whose fathers and brothers, wearing only the old cotton shirts and baggy pants of everyday life and carrying battered Russian Kalashnikov rifles, defeated the Red Army two decades ago. American trainers marvel that, freed from heavy equipment with uniforms, Afghan soldiers can run through the mountains all day, as the Taliban guerrillas in fact do with great effect. But the U.S. military is determined to train them for another style of war. Still, the new recruits turn out for training in the blistering heat in the stony desert landscape, wearing, beneath their heavy uniforms, the smart red, green, and black warm-up outfits intended to encourage them to engage in off-duty exercise. American trainers recognize that recruits regularly wear all their gear at once for fear somebody will steal anything left behind in the barracks. But they take this overdressing, the American soldiers do, as a sign of how much Afghans love the military. My own reading, based on my observations of Afghan life during the years I've spent in that country, is this. It's a sign of how little they trust one another, or the Americans who gave them the snazzy suits. I think it also indicates the obvious, that these impoverished men, in a country without work, have joined the Afghan National Army for what they can get out of it, and keep, or sell, and that doesn't include democracy or glory. In the current policy debate about the Afghan war in Washington, Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman Carl Levin wants the Afghans to defend their country. Senator John McCain, the top Republican on the committee, agrees, but says they need even more help from even more Americans. The common ground, the sacred territory President Obama gropes for, is that whatever else happens, the U.S. must speed up the training of the so-called Afghan security forces. American military planners and policymakers already proceed as if, with sufficient training, Afghans can be transformed into scale model, wind-up American Marines. This is not going to happen. Not now. Not ever. No matter how many of our leaders concur that it must happen, and ever faster. Ann Jones, a quote from an excerpt from a larger article at TomDispatch.com. We're doing it again, aren't we? We're doing it endlessly and on and on and on. As the article points out, the Afghan army, such as it was, with baggy pants and baggy shirts and what we Americans condescendingly refer to as those funny little hats, carrying Kalashnikovs left over by the Russian army, defeated the Red Army. Drove them out of the country. And here we are. You know, when Obama, there was so much during the campaign that he said that we talked about on this program that sent up red flags, all sorts of red flags, all sorts of uh-oh. And equally the things that Hillary Clinton said. And when I pointed out those things, I'm just talking about this particular program. I'm sure other programs did the same thing. Those five or six of us that are left that are still liberal-oriented radio programs. When I pointed those things out, I would get immediate rush of emails saying, how could you hate Hillary? You son of a bitch. You're just like all the rest. You're just a sexist pig. When I said it about Obama, how could you say such things? You're just like everybody else. You're just a racist pig. It just, it was almost ridiculous. But it, in the heat of the charges of sexism and racism regarding Hillary's potential candidacy, Obama's potential candidacy, as we tried to discuss the issues that these two candidates said they supported, all that got lost. You remember that? If you're a regular listener to this program, you remember. It wasn't that long ago. It was a year ago. You remember. And I used to get pretty frustrated about it until finally I just decided that, as far as little old Mike Malloy is concerned, I'm going to back Barack Obama in the voting booth. I mean, that's what my endorsement is worth, my vote. I don't even know how Kathy voted. So, although I'm pretty sure. So here we are a year later, excuse me, and Obama's claim that the war in Afghanistan was the good war. I said it before. I said it a year ago, a year and a half ago. I say it now. What the hell is he talking about? There should not be a war in Afghanistan. There should have been a police action, so to speak, quotes around police. Send in send in McChrystal, but send him in with maybe 50 special forces, and send him in back at the end of 2001 after the attack on this country. If we're going to play the game that the Bush administration wanted us to play, and find the people who organized the training camps, well. You've just got to follow that fantasy all the way out if the fantasy of what the 9/11 Commission reported, if you want to believe that any action in Afghanistan was legitimate. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. This is the Malloy program. We've been talking about the situation in Afghanistan vis-a-vis the Obama administration, what decision is going to be made regarding more troops. The bottom line seems to be that the senior military staff that has been put in place in Afghanistan is getting antsy. According to reports in McClatchy newspapers, General McChrystal, the top dog there, has told friends that if he doesn't get his way, Stanley McChrystal is going to resign his commission and get out of the military, which would probably be a good idea for someone like McChrystal. The skinny is, among his senior staff, quote, he's not going to bend to political pressure. Which is kind of an odd statement, if not one of almost borderline insurrection. It's not called political pressure; it's called chain of command. And I don't know why a talk show host in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains has to toss that out over the airwaves. It is not political pressure; it is called chain of command. And the top dog in the chain of command, the commander in chief, is a civilian, and it's the president of the United States. No matter who that president is. But at least McChrystal, I don't know if this is just an idle threat or if he's, if this is the equivalent of Molly when she was 3 years old laying down on the floor kicking her feet. If I don't get my way, I'll take my marbles and dollies and go home. I have no idea, but we're in a not good position here. Just a couple more little facts here. There are now 62,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan, and the rest of the additional troops that Obama ordered there are expected to arrive by November. That would bring the total to 68,000. McChrystal is talking about another 45,000, so you see where that puts us, over 100,000 troops in Afghanistan. And according to McClatchy, violence is at its highest levels of the war as the resurgent Taliban take over more and more of the country. Since Obama took office, 197 U.S. service members have been killed in Afghanistan as of Friday just passed. In August, 2009 became the deadliest year of the nearly eight-year war for American troops, and so far at least 25 have been killed this month. Every time I see one of those signs that these right-wing nose pickers carries around, freedom isn't free, I just about go berserk. No, freedom isn't free. And freedom has absolutely nothing to do with invading and occupying a country and trying to force its people to think and behave the way we do and govern themselves the way we do. While in the process, we murder hundreds, thousands, and in the case of Iraq, hundreds of thousands of their civilians in order to make a goddamn point. What is the point? Freedom isn't free. Dumbasses that carry those signs. I'm yelling again. Bruce writes, Pakistan doesn't seem to be as out of control as it appeared that it likely would be by now at the time Obama took office. That could change his thinking about committing to endless war in Afghanistan. Or not. Yeah, remember the, in addition to tracking down the people who engineered or organized or trained the people who, if you want to believe the official story, came to this country on September 11th and did all this damage, which, Jesus, that makes no, even that makes no sense to me. That, oh well, if you want to believe that story, then, having spent 8 years trying to track those people down, I mean, let's be real. Osama bin Laden is long dead. He doesn't exist anymore. These tapes that keep coming are nonsense. You know it as well as I do. It's absolute CIA or whatever garbage lies. Come on. Come on. You don't believe these incidents where, oh, here's another videotape sent by Osama bin Laden. You don't believe that, do you? You don't believe those things are real, do you? Well, okay, if you do, then, okay, I mean, that's up to you. Sharon, our military affairs correspondent, writes, remember that the most senior generals on active duty now were given their third and fourth stars by Donald Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld ran off, humiliated, failed to support, fired, or otherwise retired the good officers like Shinseki, Abizaid, Casey, Eaton, Batiste, Newbold, Swanick, Riggs, and even retired generals Zinni and Garner. Also remember that George W. Bush went through a lot of generals before he found one that said what he wanted to hear. Petraeus. Surge. So that's what we're stuck with. And Sharon's right. Those generals who, while they understand military strategies and tactics, they also understand the overarching nature of war, and they also understand that there are situations in which the U.S. military simply should not be involved under any circumstances because it is a meat grinder. An honest-to-God military commander does not want to put those under his authority in harm's way to a degree that almost guarantees that the casualties are going to be enormous. unless the end result is the freedom of the Western world. I mean, if it's invading Iwo Jima, okay. If it's the Battle of the Bulge or the landing at Normandy, okay. Then a commander will take a look at the situation and say, you know, this is going to be horrifying. We're going to lose 50,000 people today. But what's the choice? And you can rationally and calmly make the argument, I don't care what your position is on war, you can make the argument that there were decisions made during World War II on that level. Now, whether those decisions were the result of political missteps that go back 30 years before the war is for the historians to debate. But this situation in Afghanistan, there is no collapse of the Western world hanging in the balance. There is no fear of America being attacked unless it's by Republicans or Glenn Beck or members of the Bush crime family who are pissed off because they only got to serve 8 years and doing everything they can to worm and eat at the foundation of this country and bring it down. What's at stake here? What's the issue? What's the issue in Afghanistan? I ask that question a lot, and nobody comes up with any answers. And rational people can't. Irrational people will say, well, freedom isn't free, my goddamn. But the generals that were cashiered, that were gotten rid of, the ones that Sharon is writing about here, they were combat-hardened soldiers, but they were not war lovers like Stanley McChrystal seems to be. Like David Petraeus most assuredly is. And what we are left with are not people like Shinseki and Abizaid and Casey and Batiste. No, we don't have those people anymore. Or Zinni. Or Garner. This is a horrifying, horrifying mistake that's going to be made. And you know what's going to happen if Obama says, okay, we're out of there. Oh, my God. Right-wing thugs, worms, vermin, scum in this country, the attack is going to be relentless. But this is where Obama can show his backbone, his courage. And if he agrees to send more troops, then the United States is committing once again an act that is going to further weaken and eventually destroy us. You know that. I know that. Why doesn't Obama know that?
Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, Irish Dave, who spent time in Vietnam, writes, Mike, it seems like deja vu all over again. A fighting force of small irregulars carrying AK-47s, wearing light cotton clothing. Then it was black pajamas, subsisting on a handful of rice versus a modern, heavily equipped army of invaders and their local allies governed by a so-called elected government, soon to be gone. You know, others have often accused me, Dave writes, of wanting to go back to the 60s. Of course, I never left, but at least I learned a few things back in the day. Oh, like clarity of purpose and sufficiency of force. Empire ain't free either. Irish Dave. And Bob writes in a little scene. This applies to McChrystal, Stanley McChrystal. Remember in How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb? Sterling Hayden as General Jack D. Ripper, and he was talking with Peter Sellers as Group Captain Lionel Mandrake. General Ripper. Mandrake, I suppose it never occurred to you that while we're chatting here so enjoyably, a decision is being made by the President of the Joint Chiefs in the war room at the Pentagon. And when they realize there is no possibility of recalling the wing, there will be only one course of action open. Total commitment. Mandrake, do you recall that what Clemenza once said about war? Mandrake, no, I don't think I do, sir. No. Ripper. He said war was too important to be left to the generals. When he said that 50 years ago, he might have been right. But today, war is too important to be left to politicians. They have neither the time, the training, nor the inclination for strategic thought. I can no longer sit back and allow communist infiltration, communist indoctrination, communist subversion, and the international communist conspiracy to sap and impurify all of our precious bodily fluids. Gee, Bob adds, it looks like insane warmongering generals have hopped off the screen into real life. Remember that scene? Oh, my God. Wasn't that on last night on A&E? Condoleezza Rice, the shoe lady, has slipped out of the woodwork, and she has offered up her astute Secretary of Defense, or I'm sorry, Secretary of State and Special Advisor to the President advice here. She gave an interview to Fortune magazine today, and she said, quote, if you want another terrorist attack in the United States, abandon Afghanistan, end quote. She went on to say, quote, the last time we left Afghanistan and we abandoned Pakistan, that territory became the very territory on which Al-Qaeda trained and attacked us on September 11th. So our national security interests are very much tied up in not letting Afghanistan fail again and become a safe haven for terrorists, end quote. Oh, my God. Rice made the remarks, according to the article here, after new threats of a possible terrorist attack emerged following a series of arrests in Denver and New York over the past couple of days related to an alleged bomb plot. So there you have it. If you want another 9/11, according to the shoe lady, just pull out of Afghanistan. Well, I think we understand, don't we, what Barack Obama is going to say when he makes his, when is he supposed to make his decision? Is it next week or the week after? I think it's before the end of this month, which is, another week is about it. Oh, by the way, speaking of another week, don't forget next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, I will be in San Francisco at the, what's the place? The, oh my God. Oh no. The Yoshi's. I will be there for a special appearance sponsored by Green 960 AM in San Francisco, our affiliate in San Francisco. I am really looking forward to this. So, if you would like to get tickets, go to green960.com where you'll find all the information. Excuse me. When Randy Rhodes was there some time ago, understand it was a sellout. I'm certainly hoping that it's going to be a sellout this time, too. Don't embarrass me, y'all. All right? Come on now. So go to green960.com. It'll be next Wednesday at, I believe, 7 p.m. And then I'm going to stay in San Francisco for 2 days and do the show from the Green 960 studios. So that's the web address, green960.com. And get a ticket. All right. I talked with John Scott today from Green 960, and he said, man, this is going to be a hoot. So I think it will be, too. Every time I've gone to San Francisco for one of these gigs, it's been a lot of fun. So this time at Yoshi's in San Francisco, a week from tomorrow night, be there or be square. It'll be a Wednesday night. I guess that's the only night that they could book it. Hope you're going to be there. All right. Quick break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Pelloy.
liberal helping of truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. One more thing here from Michael about one of the arguments that is lost in the debate about continuing the occupation and military presence, U.S. military presence in Afghanistan. Occupation always encourages terrorism. Both phenomena are intimately linked. As Michael writes, if the object is to reduce the chances of terrorism on our soil, then occupation is antithetical to that end. From the time that we coerced the Saudis to accept our soldiers in Saudi Arabia on a permanent basis, there were terrorist attacks on American interests in 1993, 1995, 1996, 1998, 2000, and culminating in the attacks of September 11, 2001. With the prospect of being able to move troops into Iraq, Bush moved those forces out of Saudi Arabia into Kuwait, Qatar, and elsewhere. The terrorism against the U.S. mainland stopped. Remember, prior to the attacks of 9/11, when Osama bin Laden was alive and was doing his fundamentalist Muslim thing, the major complaint he had against the United States was the presence of U.S. troops in the Muslim holy country, the country that contained the Medina and Mecca, the two holiest sites in the Islamic religion. And that was one of the things that bin Laden and others railed against, because this was a defilement. This was sacrilege. This was something that in Islam just would not be tolerated. The presence of infidels armed in the areas of their holiest sites. And I think, again, if you want to believe the story, you can choose to believe it or not believe it. One of the statements attributed to bin Laden after the attacks on this country on 9/11, one of the statements was simply, I'm paraphrasing here wildly, but it was, this is in retribution for the U.S. maintaining this presence of military people, infidel military people, in Saudi Arabia. And so we got out. We got out very quickly. Now, do you remember hearing any on the right talking about appeasement, saying that Bush cut and run, saying this, saying that? No, you didn't. Of course not. But whoever was advising Bush was in turn advised, you better get the U.S. troops out of there or this is going to continue. So they got the troops out. Out. Got them out. The Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories is another example. Occupation breeds terrorism. Of course it does. What is this supposed to do? What would you do, truth seeker, especially you people who say freedom isn't free? What would you do if an occupying army came here? We have committed acts of terror all over the planet. Jesus Christ! We have destroyed villages. We have blown up countries. And I'm not talking about World War II. I'm not talking about Korea. Forget that. We have destabilized governments. We have supported the murder of millions of people. Is that not terrorism? We overthrew the government of Chile and had their duly elected president executed. Thanks to Henry Kissinger. I mean, the list is on and on. Are we this stupid that we don't even know this? What would you do then? If a foreign military force said, okay, it's enough. You know, the United States is a terrorist organization. They harbor terrorists. They train terrorists. They arm terrorists. They send terrorists they send them to my country and killed civilians and just blew people up indiscriminately and bombed villages and tried to overthrow my government, did overthrow my government, put in a puppet regime. God damn them. And came to this country, sent an expeditionary force here, and somehow we're successful in thwarting our military. What would you do? What would you do? Would you commit acts of insurgency against the occupier? Or would you just stick your thumb in your mouth and sit there and weep and whine? What would you do? Well, if you're a Republican, you'd stick your thumb in your mouth and sit there and weep and whine. But if you are someone who says no to an invader, like most organized societies do, I believe it has something to do with genetics and survival and DNA and yada, yada, yada. What would you do? You would do anything. You would blow up bridges. You would set fire to, you would learn how to build IEDs. You would try to kill as many of the invader as you possibly could. And you might even organize a group to go to the invader's country and set off a bomb in one of the invader's business districts or shopping centers. Wouldn't you? I know I would. Of course you would. So why do we think that other people are not willing, committed, driven to do the same thing? Very simple. How to end this madness? Get out. Just like Bush got out of Saudi Arabia. Just get out. Now, that may mean the beginning of the end of empire, but the beginning of the end of empire started in 1975. Was it 75? You remember the pictures? From atop the U.S. Embassy in downtown Saigon, the helicopters lifting off with people holding on to the runners. Do you remember that? Actually, the beginning of the end of empire was when we first committed troops to Vietnam during the Eisenhower years. That was the beginning of empire. I'm sorry, the beginning of the end of empire. So here we are. I mean, and what's wrong with ending empire? Why not bring the boys home? Bring the troops home. The boys and the girls, bring them home. Why not do that? Why not stop spending $700 billion a year on weapons systems? Why not come home? Why not come home and build this country? Build the infrastructure. Oh, Jesus. Listen to him. Listen to him. He's talking like a goddamn communist. Listen to him. A cut and run Malloy. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just like my hero George Bush. Why not get out of their countries? Why not do that? please. Since Barack Obama took office, 197 U.S. service members have been killed in Afghanistan as of last Friday. This is Tuesday. I don't know how that number has gone up. Maybe over 200. In August, 2 months ago, last month, 2009 became the deadliest year of our 8-year war. Deadliest year for American troops. So far in September, 25 have been killed. And nobody dare ask the question, for what? For what? I don't mean nobody. I mean, there's not a politician. There's not a single, except maybe Dennis Kucinich, maybe Bernie Sanders. I don't know. Maybe there are a couple. Maxine Waters. Maybe there are a couple. Although their number is diminishing, just like the number of so-called liberal talk show hosts or progressives on the air is diminishing, who are willing to raise that issue, members of Congress, who are willing to stand there and say, why do we continue to murder our own people by sending them into this conflict? Why do we continue to murder innocent Afghans who really and truly have done nothing to us? The people we're killing have done nothing to us. Nothing. Just like in Iraq. What the hell did those people do to us? Nothing. They had the misfortune of being Iraqis. And apparently the Afghans now have the same misfortune of being Afghans. It's astonishing.
But no, man. Hey, God damn it, freedom isn't free. If we don't fight them here or there, we'll fight them here.
Remember that?
If we don't fight the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, we'll have to fight them in the streets of El Paso.
Remember that? If we don't fight the Vietnamese in the jungles outside Da Nang, we'll have to fight them in the streets of San Francisco. Right? Well, we fought them in the jungles outside Da Nang and all over that country, and they kicked our ass. as dedicated insurgents always will do, just like you and I would do. You and I would until we died, and 2 million Vietnamese died. So you and I might be among the dead, but we would fight, wouldn't we? We would put on our easy to maneuver clothing, loose pants, loose shirt, pick up a Kalashnikov or an AK-47 or whatever we get our hands on, and grab a bag of dried fruit and head out to kill people who invaded our country, and we would kill them with absolutely zero remorse. And if they tried any of this smart-ass stuff like coming into our neighborhood schools to inoculate our children against flu, we would show up the next day with our machetes and hack off the arms of the children who'd been inoculated. We'll be right back.
Another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. It's 10 before the hour. We do have Uncle Mike's Story Corner coming up next hour. We're also going to open the lines during the break here, so if you want to check in. There is a, I mentioned this the other night, there is an attempt to change the so-called USA Patriot Act. It's called Patriot Act Reform. Senator Russ Feingold and nine other senators, all of whom are Democrats except one, have introduced something called the Justice Act, which effectively reins in the out-of-control government powers that is the Patriot Act. It's called the Justice Act, and although I have pretty much lost faith in sending emails to members of Congress or phone calls, you might want to do it on this one. Do you remember what the Patriot Act, the USA Patriot Act, did? Seriously, it gave the Bush crime family and any government, until this thing has changed, any U.S. government, the power to get into your medical records, your tax records, information about the books you buy, what your history is at your local library. Do you remember all this? It's there. It's law. And they don't need any probable cause. This is just at the whim of some, I don't know, freak in the Justice Department, a career freak who was embedded by the Bush crime family. They don't need the permission of the Attorney General. Don't think that they do. It also gave the government the power to break into your home, conduct secret searches without telling you for weeks or months or ever if they choose not to. Jesus, God, do you remember that? Do you remember that? That's a long time ago, wasn't it? Huh? Long time ago. The attack on this country is September 11, 2001. The USA Patriot Act was passed and into law in a month later. And you got to wonder, don't you? I mean, how in the world? They can't write health care legislation to save their lives. It takes committee hearings and weeks and months and on and on. And arguably, you can go all the way back to 1993 in an attempt to write a health care legislation. Hell, you can go back to Truman. But the USA Patriot Act that utterly destroyed your rights as a citizen in this country, it took them less than a month. Not just to write it, to conceive it, write it, get it passed, Less than a month. Isn't that amazing? Unless it was already written. Ah, no. Come on, Malloy. Put away your tinfoil hat. If it were already written, then it would mean somebody had prior knowledge of what was going to occur on September 11, 2001, right? Because that's what it was about, wasn't it? Yes, it was. Well, then! Don't go there, Malloy! That'll destroy what little shreds of credibility you have left. You're going to become a 9/11 truther? Oh, no. No, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. But on the other hand, how did the geniuses who wrote the USA Patriot Act, were they that prescient? Did they have they had foreknowledge, they were psychic, they were, what do you call that, long-distance viewing? What do you call that, Kathy? Long-distance viewing, is that what you call it? Where you can see you can see stuff, whatever it's called. Apparently, that's what they had. The Feingold's Act will protect the privacy of your records, no matter what they are, by reining in, this is what it says, the government's use of national security letters to collect the records of innocent people. It will protect humanitarian activities by preventing prosecution of people who work with or for charities that give humanitarian aid and good faith in war-torn countries. Yeah, if you start a charity to collect clothing for war victims in Afghanistan, do you know what's going to happen to you? Do you understand? As soon as you incorporate your subchapter S or nonprofit or whatever the hell it is, you will be visited by FBI, CIA, God only knows who, because obviously you're running a terrorist support organization. That's according to USA Patriot Act. Feingold's Act, the Justice Act, will protect your First Amendment rights by requiring the government to convince a court that a national security gag order is necessary. They don't have to do that now. Protect your First Amendment rights. We need an act of Congress to protect your First Amendment rights now. We don't pay attention to this anymore. We've forgotten all this, haven't we? Huh? Feingold's Act will protect the privacy of communications by amending last year's sweeping FISA Amendments Act that Barack Obama voted in favor of, I believe, that will better protect Americans' phone calls and emails. My God. Well, anyway, it's up for renewal, the USA Patriot Act, at the end of this year. So look for a concerted and carefully orchestrated effort on the part of the suicider, Glenn Beck, the drug addict and child molester, Rush Limbaugh, and the guy who likes to visit the bunny ranch when he's in Nevada, Sean Hannity, and the rest of these goddamn monsters, including Crazy Eyes Michelle Malkin. The assault will begin. You see, any change that Russ Feingold wants to institute in the USA Patriot Act will be an act of treason by Russ Feingold. Why is he in Congress? Quick, let's find someone to run against him. Quick, let's send millions of dollars to remove this commie simp bastard out of the Congress. You know that's going to happen, don't you? You know that's going to happen. Just as you know that the right-wing noise machine is already gearing up to convince the American public, or the crazy ones, which is a huge plurality of Americans now all of a sudden, that any attempt on Barack Obama's part to withdraw from this madness in Afghanistan is a willful attempt on the part of Obama that proves he's a Muslim, that proves he's not an American, that proves all the bad things they've been saying about it because he's trying to destroy America. Oh, by the way, he's also, and this will be the utter proof, the Antichrist. back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. We have been talking here for the audience that's joining us from San Francisco. We've been talking about Afghanistan for the better part of this program tonight. Got an email here from Tom in Daytona. I want to share this with you, and then we'll do some phone calls here. The number here is 877-996-2556. Mike, had the discomfort of hearing Joe Biden's replacement on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee talk on an NPR interview show recently. This was Senator Ted Kaufman from Delaware. He's visited Afghanistan and talked to all the big muckety-mucks. Yeah, Karzai is corrupt. We have to see how it's going to work out. Yeah, he may have cheated on the elections, but we have to wait and see. The overwhelming majority of Afghans want us there, according to Senator Kaufman. This may be true of the camp followers, but it's patently untrue, according to polls. We can't win it by military force. That's why we have the new strategy from our great generals, putting the population first. And that's why we need more troops, according to Kaufman, who styles himself, like Joe before him, as an expert now on matters military. Oh, yeah, we're going to investigate those disastrous killings of civilians that keep happening. That stuff has got to stop. No, we're not nation building. No, we wouldn't fall for that. But we do need to build up, train, support, pay, and create the Afghan National Police Forces and Defense Force to the tune of another 250,000 personnel, or we can't safeguard the population. And also, this isn't like Iraq because there is no infrastructure at all. So we, naturally our contractors, KBR, Bechtel, etc., we need to build a national road system, among other things, in Afghanistan. Never mind that we can't afford our own road system here at home and need to sell them to foreign corporations to keep them in repair. This is the kind of leadership we now have in the United States. No comment on the cost of these new projects for the defense contractors. No comment concerning how all costs for our surge and nation building will not be funded with additional tax revenues. McChrystal and Petraeus are the salespeople for the defense contractors. Naomi Klein calls U.S. Armed Forces the hollowed out armed forces as a result of Rumsfeld's revolution. On September 10th, 2001, in a little reported speech to his generals, Rumsfeld declared war on the Pentagon bureaucracy. That was the day before the shock was applied, so everyone got the message. The armed forces are little more than the vanguard and bodyguards for the defense contractors, who now perform almost all their functions. McChrystal will no doubt find lucrative jobs with the mainstream media and the defense contractors if he resigns as threatened. He can then posture as a disinterested commentator. How much leadership can Obama show? He couldn't even appoint his own Secretary of Defense. Tom from Daytona. All right. Let's do some phone calls as promised. Charlie is in Wyoming listening on XM. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm okay. How are you?
Surviving.
Okay, I hear that.
That's about all we can do these days. Calling for two issues. One is, those of us of the 60s, we need to come out of mothballs and start another movement and unite with Jesus again and, try to get, actually drive the war. One item.
Charlie, let me put you on hold because you're fading in and out. You may be in a bad cell. I realize you're only driving through Wyoming, so I'll come back to you in a second, but we were catching about every fifth, we're missing about every fifth word you were saying there. Just stay on the line. We'll come back to you in a second. Steven is in Burbank, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Steven.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
This reminds me of right-wingers that I knew a little bit up north, a little bit south of central California, say in the Indian Wells Valley. These right-wingers wanted to blow up the California aqueduct because that was their water for their agriculture. That was their water for their lakes to go fishing in and stuff. And they failed to see the overall picture of, you know, the cities making the tractors, the cities making the fertilizer, the cities packaging the seeds to go back up. They can't see the big picture. And the same thing could happen in Afghanistan. It's Taliban, they try to put that pipeline, they're going to continue to blow it up. every day, one mm-hmm. after the other, explosions every day on that gas pipeline. And I guess that makes the construction corporatists happy, you know, to be spending all that money.
Yeah, unless the corporatists cut a deal with the Taliban and say, look, stop, please stop. Here's what we'll do. We'll arm you. We'll stay away from your poppy fields. We'll give you lots of money. We won't interfere in the way you want to brutalize the females in your tribes, the young girls and the women. We'll just leave you alone. Just let us put the pipeline in.
Well, to the Taliban, it's to them, some things are more important than money. And, you know, if we're always thinking about money, if we want to suck the natural resources out of a different region of the earth, wouldn't it be cheaper and easier just to do a pipeline like they did with the transatlantic cable for communications? You know, just lay a pipeline all the way across the Atlantic and forget about Afghanistan. And cheaper and easier, wouldn't it? Maybe not.
I think it would be. Of course, if corporate America would devote all of its monumental resources into energy other than fossil fuels, just think what that would open up in this country in terms of renewable energy and jobs and peace. And I'm talking like a crazy man. It never happened. Hey, thanks, Stephen. I appreciate you checking in. All right, let's try Charlie again. All right, Charlie, go ahead.
Hi, Mike.
Hey. Now it's worse. Charlie, I am sorry, man. I don't know what to tell you. I'll leave you on hold. Well, okay. Charlie, thanks. I appreciate the fact that you tried, but we just couldn't get you in a good cell, I guess. Arthur is in Boston, listening on XM. Hey, Arthur.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Earlier, you said something about September 10th, and it reminded me also, I think September 9th or September 10th, 2001, Donald Rumsfeld said that they were missing, I think the Pentagon was missing over $1 trillion or $2 trillion that was unaccounted for that they couldn't find.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
You remember that? And mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden 9/11 happened and they had no problem getting that money, more money, you know what I mean?
Yeah, whatever happened to that story? $2 trillion missing from Pentagon misspending or fraud or theft or whatever, and that story just disappeared so quick, made your head spin, right?
Yeah, well, because of 9/11, and then, you know, everyone's mind was wrapped up in that, and we didn't even think about the $9.1 to the Pentagon to the defense budget.
Yeah.
I mean, it just kind of adds fuel to the fire of, you know, how it was an inside job.
Well, it does indeed, Arthur. And of course, the biggest suck hole in America is the military-industrial complex, the one that Eisenhower warred against, the one that anybody with a sense of a sack full of doorknobs could see, is what keeps this country constantly in debt, A, B, hated around the earth. C, causes dissension within our country. We have the war lovers and the war haters. And if there was no defense industry, not defense, I hate to use that term, offense, weapons industry, death industry, murder industry, if there were no such thing, and there needn't be, I mean, what in the hell do we need a military force for? Seriously, we need a National Guard and an Army Reserve. And what else do we need? Come on. Because we have 9,000 nuclear warheads. If we ever felt threatened, that would be the end of the threat. I mean, Jesus, isn't it the right-wingers who used to froth all over themselves, although they wouldn't pick up a weapon and go to Vietnam? Weren't they the ones that said, let's nuke them, let's turn them into a goddamn parking lot? Remember that? They really wanted to, and we still have that capability to turn any country into a glass parking lot. To continue to spend trillions of dollars, which is what it amounts to over any, pick a period of time that's more than a year, trillions of dollars on the military-industrial complex, to continue to do that is madness. It's just, it's insanity. 9/11 is a clear example of the ineffectiveness of all those trillions of dollars we've spent, all the hundreds of thousands of American soldiers who have died. Okay, not hundreds of thousands since the end of World War II, but certainly tens of thousands of American soldiers who have died, 100,000 in Vietnam and Korea, yes. But all of that for nothing? Because apparently, if you believe the official story, when nine people decided to bomb this country using airplanes, why, they just got on a plane and did it.
Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
It is 21 past the hour. Back to your calls for a while. Bob is in Kansas City listening on XM. Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. What I wanted to say is, to begin with, I've just started listening to you in the last couple of years, and I was really hooked on you when I heard you refer to the Bush administration as the Bush crime family. I knew that you had your head on straight. And I've come up with something, an idea that I thought you would be a great person to pass it on. I'm starting to see a change, whereas we have two political parties in the United States, one being the Republican Party, one being Fox News. You could also refer to them, and this is what I'd love to stick. I'd love if people would start referring to them as the dependent party.
Dependent.
Because they're the dependent party. They're dependent on Fox News and Rush Limbaugh to tell them their politics. Now, I love to debate with people about things, but please bring something to the table that's factual, intelligent, and newsworthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they keep the dead horse, you know, the lifers and the death panel people and all that. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it just shows ignorance. And you know, if ignorance truly is bliss, I don't understand why the Republicans are so angry. I thought I'd throw that little nugget out there and see if you'd run with it.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you checking in. I don't believe the just a minor correction. I always take correction. So here's one for you. Ignorance is not bliss, necessarily. The saying is, where ignorance is bliss. You know, where people are content with their ignorance. It's stupid to be wise. It's worthless. It's pointless to have any wisdom. I'm not sure where you were going. If you appreciate the phrase Bush crime family and say that we're on the same page, okay. I just didn't quite follow what you were saying, which is my fault, not your fault. As far as ignoring all these crazy people that cluster around Glenn Beck, he's the new star of craziness in this country. They cluster around him like flies around a pile of human feces. Since he is the new leader of the crazy people, the Republican Party, the crazy people, the conservatives, the right wingers, what have you. I say leave him alone. Just I'm pretty much, you know, I will still reference these morons, but it might be like the, remember the Comet people? Was it Comet Kohoutek? Which was it? Somebody will send this to me, where they were all part of this death cult and they decided to hitch onto the comet, but they had to kill themselves to do it. And the old man, and wasn't there an old woman involved, and they convinced all their father. What was that? What was that comet situation a couple of years ago? But I think that's, That's a good possibility that the birthers and the deathers and the teabaggers and this strange collection of disturbed Americans will follow Glenn Beck, into a mass suicide. I just have a feeling that that's coming. And never get in the way when your worst enemy is trying to destroy himself, whether that is a political statement or a statement of philosophy or politics or whatever it is. You know, stay out of the way. And I think, Hail Bop comment. Thank you. Who sent that? Well, whoever sent it. Yeah, it was the Hail Bop. I always thought that was a pretty cool name, you know, Hail Bop, hey, babe, bop. And they all decided to commit suicide and ride the comet or something. I don't know. I really don't care. They were star beings or something. We're all star beings, but just not that kind, you know. So to stay out of the way, the Republican Party is becoming a death cult, like the Catholic Church, like the Christian religion. It's becoming a death cult. But I don't think it's going to have the power over people on earth the way Christianity has held, has had for so many centuries. It's going to be a very short-lived death cult. I think it contains within it the seeds of immediate destruction, especially when its leadership is so bizarre. All of these people, Crazy Eyes Malkin and the suicider and the drug addict and the guy who likes to go to the bunny ranch and who's the other one in San Francisco, the one that says autistic children are faking it and you just need to bash them around a little bit and they'll straighten up. So all those people and Sarah Palin, who couldn't find her ass with both hands, all of them. Ann Coulter, who has taken a back seat because it's much more fun, I guess, for media to watch the spinning of Glenn Beck than it is to watch the spinning of Ann Coulter. She got overexposed anyway. So I don't know what to tell you, man, except just stand back, get a big bowl of popcorn, and watch these sons of bitches destroy themselves. The problem here is that they might try to destroy the country, which I think they're trying to do in their own trip. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. It's also time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Oh, it's a wet evening in Georgia. The sky is wet, the trees are wet, the ground is wet. Everything is wet. Time for Uncle Mike's Story Corner, something you can get your mind around as you get ready for sleep tonight. Tonight's Uncle Mike's Story Corner is written by Chris Hedges. Mr. Hedges writes the following. The rage of the disposed is fracturing the country, dividing it into camps that are unmoored from the political mainstream. Movements are building on the ends of the political spectrum that have lost faith in the mechanisms of democratic change. You can't blame them. But unless we on the left move quickly, this rage will be captured by a virulent and racist right wing, one that seeks a disturbing proto-fascism. Every day counts. Every deferral of protest hurts. We should, if we have the time and the ability, make our way to Pittsburgh for the meeting of the G20 this week, rather than do what the power elite is hoping we will do, stay home. Complacency comes at a horrible price. The draconian security measures put in place to silence dissent in Pittsburgh are disproportionate to any actual security concern. They are a response, not to a real threat, but to the fear gripping the established centers of power. The power elite grasps, even if we do not, the massive fraud and theft being undertaken to save a criminal class on Wall Street and international speculators of the kinds who were executed in other periods of human history. They know the awful cost this plundering of state treasuries will impose on workers, who will become a permanent underclass. And they also know that once this is clear to the rest of us, rebellion will no longer be a foreign concept. The delegates to the G20, the gathering of the world's wealthiest nations, will consequently be protected by a National Guard combat battalion recently returned from Iraq. The battalion will shut down the area around the city center, man checkpoints, and patrol the streets in combat gear. Pittsburgh has augmented the city's police force of 1,000 with an additional 3,000 officers. Helicopters have begun to buzz gatherings in city parks. Buses driven to Pittsburgh to provide food to protesters have been impounded. Activists have been detained and permits to camp in the city parks have been denied. Websites belonging to resistance groups have been hacked and trashed, and many groups suspect that they have been infiltrated and that their phones and email accounts are being monitored. Our global economy, like our political system, has been hijacked by a tiny oligarchy composed mostly of wealthy white men who serve corporations. They have pledged to or raised a staggering $18 trillion looted largely from state treasuries to prop up banks and other financial institutions that engaged in suicidal acts of speculation and ruined the world economy. They have formulated trade deals so corporations can speculate across borders with currency, food, and natural resources, even as, according to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, over a billion people on the planet struggle with hunger. Globalization has obliterated the ability of many poor countries to protect food staples such as corn, rice, beans, and wheat with subsidies or taxes or imported staples. The abolishment of these protections has permitted the giant mechanized farms to wipe out tens of millions of small farmers, 2 million in Mexico alone, bankrupting many and driving them off their land. Those who would once feed themselves can no longer find enough food, and the wealthiest governments use institutions such as the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and the World Trade Organization like pit bulls to establish economic supremacy. There is little that most governments can do or seem able to do to fight back. But the game is up. The utopian dream of globalization has been exposed as a sham. Force is all the elites have left. We are living through one of civilization's great seismic reversals. The ideology of globalization, like all utopias that are sold as inevitable and irreversible, has become a farce. The power elite, perplexed and confused, cling to the disastrous principles of globalization and its outdated language to mask the political and economic vacuum before us. The absurd idea that the marketplace alone should determine economic and political constructs caused the crisis. It led the G20 to sacrifice other areas of human importance, from working conditions to taxation to child labor to hunger to health and pollution, on the altar of free trade. It left the world's poor worse off and the United States with the largest deficits in human history. Globalization has become an excuse to ignore the mess. It has left a mediocre elite desperately trying to save a system that cannot be saved, and more important, trying to save itself. Speculation, then President Jacques Chirac of France once warned, speculation is the AIDS of our economies. We have reached the terminal stage. The institutions that once provided alternative sources of power, including the press, government, agencies of religion, universities, and labor unions, have proved morally bankrupt. They no longer provide a space for voices of moral autonomy. No one will save us now but ourselves. Larry Holmes, an organizer from New York City, says, quote, "The best thing that happened to the establishment is the election of a black president. It will contain people for a given period of time, but time is running out. Suppose something else happens. Suppose another straw breaks. What happens when there is a credit card crisis or a collapse in commercial real estate? The financial system is very, very fragile. The legs are being kicked out from underneath it." Holmes went on, "Obama is in trouble. The economic crisis is a structural crisis. The recovery is only a recovery for Wall Street. It can't be sustained, and Obama will be blamed for it. He's doing everything Wall Street demands, but this will be a dead end. It is a prescription for disaster, not only for Obama, but the Democratic Party. It is only groups like ours, organizers, labor unions that provide hope. If labor unions will get off their ass and stop focusing on narrow legislation for their members, if they will go back to being social unions that embrace broad causes, we have a chance of effecting change. If this does not happen, it will be a right-wing disaster. Chris Hedges writing at Truth Dig, another uplifting moment in Uncle Mike's Story Corner, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Chris Hedges, of course, I've got his book on fascism on the nightstand next to the bed, along with Jeff Charlotte's book on the family. You talk about reading that will guarantee disturbing dreams. I realize I shouldn't be reading this stuff at night, really. It should be read in the brightest part of the day, sitting on the back porch where you can hear birds singing off in the woods, rather than reading it at 1 o'clock in the morning here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, when the only sounds you hear outside is a dog barking off in the distance and occasionally a coyote who's heading into the Atlanta suburbs to eat a family dog or cat. Bad mojo. Ed is in Bullhead City, Arizona, still. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Mike. Hi, brother.
Hey.
Thank you so much for the Christopher Hedges. Is there a website I can go to?
Truthdig, truthdig.org or .com. I think it's .org.
Okay, oh, good. I just haven't gone to that website today. They email me all the time.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And I am a member of a union. I'm a carpenter. And, I'm kind of like a radical in my union because I stand up and I scream and I do my best.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to get back to, I know we're short on time, but just get back to what you're talking about, the SOBs, let them destroy themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I just love that.
Well, I think that'll happen, although, Chris Hedges doesn't agree. He sees, and I would certainly defer to his opinion on this. I'll maintain my own opinion, but I defer to Chris Hedges that this power center has become a corrupted, if it always wasn't, but now it's super corrupted by these power elites. And the only thing they have left, as Chris points out, is force. The only thing they have left is weaponry. They no longer lead by, with moral authority or with, some sort of, political imperative that we can see is righteous and good and just and benefits us all. That's not what it's about anymore.
It's bullets and bombs.
That's about it. And the bullets and bombs are owned by a certain segment of the population, if not owned, certainly controlled by them. And I don't know. I get tired sometimes of hearing myself talk. I'm serious. I get very frustrated reading these very astute writers, penetrating writers, like Chris Hedges, there's a whole list. I won't go down the list. But all these guys and women who write this stuff, and I read it, and I go, Jesus, God. And it's just becoming a bit too much. And I know I'm not the only one who feels that way, Ed. Hey, listen, we got to move on. I'm going to put you on hold for a second here. We're going to have to go. I'm not the only one who feels that way. You can only take so much of this before, you know, you start to think if you're staying current on all this negative reality, which is what it is, you can only take so much before you say, you know what? There's a reason that there are other things to do. It's to get people away from thinking about this stuff. I guess tune in, turn on, drop out. I don't know anymore. I really don't.
Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul.
Mike Malloy program is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for info on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to our usual crew of reprobates, artists, crazy people, and writers and poets. And that would be Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kate Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Kathy Bay, who's the executive producer for another episode of the Malloy program. Eric is in Brownsville, Texas, listening on XM. Hey, Eric.
Hi. Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the health care reform.
Sure.
Earlier today, I was listening to a talk show on the radio, and there was a self-described average man, which to me means you make about $65,000 a year, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he's opposed to the public option because he doesn't think it's right for the insurance companies to have to compete with a government arm that doesn't run on profit. And I was just, my head just about exploded when I heard that. I mean, I'm thinking, what kind of average man is worried about the CEO of United Health that makes $100,000 an hour?
Yeah.
And guys sitting up at night worrying about the insurance companies? It's just, what we need in this country is a little bit more class consciousness. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, look what happens when you have a quasi-government organization like, say, the U.S. Post Office, and then you have FedEx and UPS. FedEx and UPS, just how do they stay in business? I mean, that's the ridiculousness of this clown's argument. And obviously, the guy that was talking on the radio program is not for real. He's some kind of a plant, some kind of a shill, some kind of a jerk. But if anyone ever says that to you, I mean, that's the quickest thing that comes to mind. We have a federally subsidized U.S. Postal Service, and then we also have FedEx and UPS and probably another half dozen private mail delivery systems, services, and the private companies don't seem to be hurt by the semi-public option of using the post office. But never mind, that's too close to facts and reality, and the average right-winger or the average Republican is terrified of facts.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I hope that these people out there aren't so stupid to be concerned about the super rich oligarchs and sitting up at night worrying about whether they're going to be able to make it or not. That just killed me.
Well, I don't think anybody who's sane gives a tinker's damn about the super rich. But our country all of a sudden is chock-a-block with insane people. Booger eaters, people that crawl around on their knees looking for bugs from which they can pull off the legs. And they're all Republicans. They're conservatives. They're crazy people. No offense to the mentally ill who are not Republicans, but these people are crazy. They're mad. They're insane. And you're right, focusing on,
I want the rich to continue to be rich so that I can continue to cruise along on my $65,000 a year or my $35,000 or my $15,000. No, I don't have any health insurance, and I don't want any because public option, goddamn, that would hurt the insurance.
You know, it's madness. It's madness, Eric. Just complete insanity. Dave is in Huntington Beach, listening on KTLK. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mike. I love your show.
Thanks.
I was stunned to find that when Bush wrote Iraq's constitution in 2005, he gave them single-payer health care.
Why, of course.
And did you have any idea whether the United States people were paying for Iraq's single-payer health care?
Well, you can make the argument that we're paying for everything in Iraq. We destroyed everything there. We executed their dictator. We destroyed or allowed to be destroyed their antiquities that went back 6,000-7,000 years, which always were a problem for the Christians anyway, because and the Jews and the Muslims, because there was no existence 7,000 years ago. Anyway, we destroyed their country. We've been destroying their their country since 1992. We've been murdering their people. We have absolutely ruined everything in that cradle of civilization. So, yeah, anything that happens there that requires money or financial services ultimately is paid for by the American taxpayer. We, yes, are paying for single-payer health care in Iraq. Absolutely, no question.
I was stunned to find that out.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you.
I wonder if those people who were holding the signs last week at, about the watermelon patch in front of the White House and
yeah.
the fried chicken, wonder what they would say if they knew that they were really the socialists.
That would they would disagree and say that's just Satan putting lies out, that there is no such thing as single-payer health care in Iraq. That's Satan. Who obviously is spreading the word through the mainstream liberal-controlled media. In other words, the answer from the people holding the signs in front of the White House would be as incoherent as anything they say. These are crazy people. They're insane. There is nothing you can say that would be of a factual nature or reality-based that connects. Nothing. Nothing. So... you know, that's an absolute waste of time, Dave, to think that presented with facts that they would respond. I mean, come on. They're presented with facts every day about evolution, about the age of the universe being approximately 14 or 15 billion years. They're presented with as many facts as they want. I mean, how do these people go to the Museum of Natural History in New York and walk out still retaining their crazy belief that everything's only 6,000 years old at most? Facts don't matter. Facts are inconsiderate things that hop up like fleas and bite you, and you have to brush them off and fumigate them, and that's what your Bible is for. Jesus, come on, Dave. Thanks for checking in, pal. Craziness. Absolute craziness. Hey, thanks for hanging out tonight once again. I'm not sure why you keep coming back here, but thank you for doing it. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Results may